Hi, everybody. It's Susanna Mars. Just to remind you, that was Joe Kai and the Happy Song. There's so much great stuff going on in town right now, and needless to say, I love talking to artists about the projects they're working on and sharing that with you. Here's a couple extra adventures for the new year. I visited Northwest Classical Theater Collaborative, and they are doing a full production of a new adaptation by Patrick Walsh of Three Sisters by Anton Chekhov. It's a part of the Fertile Ground Theater Festival of New Works and runs January 12th through the 28th at the Shoebox Theater. And then I spoke to Nikki Weaver and Gretchen Corbett. Gretchen is directing Ms. Weaver's original piece, Weaving Women Together, which is going to run at Portland Opera while Portland Playhouse is getting their renovation completed, and they're going to be running there on January 17th through the 28th. Enjoy these two great conversations. Hi, everybody. I'm Susanna Mars, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. Full disclosure, I am speaking to all the creators of Three Sisters here at Northwest Classical Theater Collaborative because of my dear friend, Grant Byington. And he reached out to me about this show. It's going to be a part of the Fertile Ground Festival. They're going to open on January 12th and close on January 28th. And if you are interested after you listen to this fascinating conversation, I'm counting on all of you to make it fascinating, then you can go to nwctc.org and get tickets to see Patrick Walsh's adaptation of Three Sisters. So, hi, Patrick.
Hey, Susanna. Thanks for having us.
Yes. And in fact, I'll have everybody introduce themselves now. I forgot that.
Hi, this is Patrick Walsh, the director and adapter of Three Sisters.
Dainichi Naroh, I play Irina.
Elizabeth Jackson, I play Masha.
Christy Bigelow, I play Olga.
The Three Sisters. I'm understanding that you came upon this idea after the election.
Yeah, I woke up on November 9th, 2016, in probably the saddest state that I've ever found myself. I think I'm really lucky. I feel like I've led a charmed life in a lot of ways. I don't really think many bad things have happened to me. And not that anybody out there would know this, but like I sleep incredibly well, and I didn't sleep for 4 days straight after the election because I was really apoplectic about the world and what the election of Donald Trump meant. And for whatever reason, I reached for my dog-eared copy of The Complete Works of Anton Chekhov. And basically by the end of the week, I had read all the major plays. And, you know, and for the first time in my life, I feel like I understood what these characters are going through and what Chekhov is talking about just how hard it is to get out of bed, how hard it is to live, and how hard it is just to get through to the next day, and how much strength that takes as human beings. And Three Sisters has always been my favorite play of his, and I just felt like the right time to direct it. But the problem was, like, all the versions that I've read just felt so dusty and old and just felt like they were in a vernacular that no longer exists. So basically I decided to adapt it myself to really create something that I think a Portland audience in 2018 is going to understand and really enjoy.
Oh, I'm curious also what brought you to Portland in the first place.
I was living in New York City, and I had a really bad quality of life, and I was working full-time as a freelance director, and basically I was leaving my apartment just about every 8 weeks to go out and direct a show, and I was just super burnt out on that, and I wasn't really being able to see the effect that any sort of, that my work was having on anybody else, which is kind of my favorite thing, is having community interaction in that and being able to see how the work affects them and how they're receiving it affects you and the different choices that you make. And so I was just looking for kind of a group of people, a community that I could have a long-term creative dialogue with, and I just chose Portland.
It's so interesting because as a regional theater actor myself, I know that there are certain things that you sacrifice when you have a regional career, and I know all you women also know the same thing. You sacrifice certain possibilities and then you gain quite a lot as well. And I know, needless to say, there's a big, you know, go back and forth between Chicago, New York, with various artists that we've all worked with at various times. But to have a regional community to work with, and for many years as I've had the opportunity, it really affords you some wonderful things.
Mm-hmm. It really does. But, you know, I think the toll it can take on you is pretty drastic, too, you know? And so, I don't know. So I was just kind of sick of that life and just decided to come out here.
Right.
And everybody pretty much I've met in this community is lovely, I have to say. It's been a really nice, it's been the right choice.
Oh, there's some we could introduce you to.
But we're not here to talk about them.
Nobody here.
I think we should just be full disclosure all the time.
It's a whole other podcast.
Yeah. You know who you are.
are not lovely people.
Yeah.
So how did you all become involved in the project?
I emailed everybody. I think I was really lucky. I got my first choice for every part, and that like never happens with anything.
So you had worked with everyone previously?
No. I had never worked with Christy. I've seen Christy and I've seen Denichia. Uh-huh. I have worked with Liz before.
Nice.
But I just emailed them, you know, after being here for a couple of years, I feel like I know the community a lot better. And mm-hmm. I think I just knew kind of the perfect people to be able to take these roles. Mm-hmm. And I just think we're really, I don't know, like I feel really blessed that I get to work with what I consider some of the best actors in town, like on this show, in one of the best plays ever written.
It was also, it was really, I thought, refreshing to not have to go through the callback audition thing and just go, this is the team and here we are together. I know I met with Patrick and we discussed a lot of different things about the show, including casting, including who's going to work on it. And it was just like, yeah, obviously, you know, it was like Patrick said, we had worked together on Richard III at Post 5. And it was just exciting to be able to do a Chekhov play because I've never done it. And I got to check it off the list. and to play Masha is just like, it's, I love it. It's so satisfying.
Why?
Because it is who I want to be all of the time. No, that's not true. She it's just such a satisfying experience to wear your heart on your sleeve in such a way and to also constantly fight to be understood and not to want to be understood. And she's just a very vexing and vexed person, and it's a lot, it's been a challenge and a lot of fun to explore why and why anybody in this room likes her, you know, and to find those redeeming qualities within her, I think is, it's been great. I love it.
Mm-hmm. Christy, who are you playing?
I'm playing Olga. So she's the oldest, the complete opposite of Masha. She does not wear her heart on her sleeve. Everything is tucked and smashed down and held very tightly. She's had to basically assume being a parent to these other two and to run the household since their mother died when they were younger and father died a year ago. And everything has been on me to basically keep the household going, make sure everybody's okay, got what they needed, happy, and essentially sacrificed her own life and sort of hopes and dreams because of that.
Dainichia, tell us about what you're up to.
Oh, Arena. It took me a little while to kind of put my feet in her shoes. She's a big dreamer, and she's at a stage in her life where she wants to explore everything, all of those big, exciting ideas you have when you're young, and then, you know, time happens and life happens, and you start realizing that, you know, all the things that you've dreamed about and wanted in your life are a lot harder to get and sometimes impossible to get. And how do you continue keeping yourself inspired and moving forward when it seems like you're climbing a mountain all of the time?
It's so funny because when you say that, and I know that Patrick wrote the adaptation in response to the election, it reminds me of our country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so.
It's like, wow, we really started out wanting some stuff.
Yeah.
And now we're really angsting over
totally.
What's really happening.
And I think it's so important to keep that soul inside of you and that hope inside of you. And you have to fight for that hope because that is what gives your life meaning. Mm-hmm. Through the struggles, you know?
Yeah. Well, and for me, I think it's really interesting that you say that because for me, it was 8 years of hope and wonderful progress. And I was proud to live here. And then all of a sudden I wasn't. And I was very angry and very, very sad. So I think it's interesting to look at it in those ways and to look at the response that my friends and family have had to this election in these three women. To see someone who squashes their feelings and someone who's pissed and someone who still holds on to something.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. Did you have something along those lines, Patrick? It looked like you were anxious to say something.
No, you know, I mean, it's just funny. I mean, I used to do only new plays. I used to just direct new plays for like 3, 4, 5 years, probably. Mm-hmm. Like, just because I think when you're a younger director, that's just what they throw at you. You know, like, take this play and see what you can do with it. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where you get your opening. And ever since moving to Portland, it's just like, all I do is classic plays, which is great for me. Like, it just feels like where I'm at, you know? I feel like I'm always looking back to find out how myself and we as a community or a country or a world got to that place, you know? And I just find much more resonance in these classic stories than I do with anything that's been written in the last 5 or 10 years, or even in the last year, you know, since the election. Like, I think this play has way more to say about the world now and how we can get through it, and also how we treat each other, how we love each other, how we hate each other, and like where those biases come from, you know? I mean, there's a huge amount of class struggle in this play. And, you know, to me, the character of Natasha, I just think is very much like a Trump voter. And I mean, she gets treated horribly, horribly by all these other characters. And I've seen this play probably 8 times. And like every time I see it, she's just played like a monster, like somebody who just comes in and takes over instead of somebody who I feel like is crushed by this intelligentsia, you know, and is made to feel small and weak, but somebody who's just biding their time till they can take over, which is, I feel like, so much like we're feeling pushback on social media, in the news, and also just since the election, that we're feeling that. And I think we're feeling, you know, I think there was a certain amount of superiority we were feeling after the 8 years, you know, and then to see the flip side of that, you know, and to see so many people I know who voted for Donald Trump being like, it's our time now, which I'm not even sure what that means. Like, I don't know. But it's frightening. And it's
a
scary
Stephen Sondheim song. It's our time.
That's also true.
And that's probably what they mean.
Yeah, yeah. I think I'm hoping that's what they mean. That there's going to be a lot more Sondheim going on. Yeah.
They're just going to do Move On from Sunday in the Park with George for the next like 7 years.
Sure.
Yes.
That would be great.
I'm voting for that.
We're heading into the woods.
So we're sitting on the set, which is really evocative. As when I first saw it, I thought, oh, fascinating. It's got an aura of elegance at some point, and obviously has had its day. And so tell me about what you can see the birch trees through. And that's right, because it's the birch forest. And tell us about that. How'd that all come to pass?
You know, we just talked, the designers, Kira Bishop, who's a lovely person, and really, really smart.
Dang, another lovely person in Portland.
We are very, it's a great team. Like, it really is. You know, I think there's probably 2 other shows that I can point to and that I've still liked everybody involved up to this point.
Now that I think of it, I have to be equitable. I mean, oh, I don't think there's been a podcast where anyone said, I hate that guy.
No,
that's fair. That'd be weird. Like, why would you say that?
That's fair. But, like, I would like you all to know that I would say that.
When you want to, call me, because that'll be fun.
But, you know, we talk so much about how, you know, how old this house is and how disposable the world is, you know, and that we really need to play it like they're going to Moscow, like they're going, like there's nothing here for them, you know, and then it just gets worse and worse. And so, you know, a lot of times I think you see it and you see a house that is very well maintained, that is beautiful, but I don't really think that's anything that these people would want to flee from, you know, like it's something, there's dilapidation, they've been living in the house for 11 years. It doesn't seem like anybody really knows. Like, they keep an old maid who doesn't seem like she really knows exactly what to do or that she's fallen behind. And so we've kind of talked about that in terms of the dilapidation of the world. And then the birch trees, one of the large conversations we've had is just that the natural world has such a long memory. And I think it's so much about what these people are trying to do and try to achieve. And also what's holding them back is these memories that might not even be real, you know, something they've built up for themselves that might not even have anything to do with what actually happened. But it's the idealized version of things that I think Olga keeps going back to time after time, that Arena may have been too young to be able to appreciate. And I think there's a certain amount being the middle child that Masha has like a better idea actually about what's out there and what they're going to see.
Well, it's interesting. It reminds me of what I'm seeing about various cities that have had, you know, very economic booms, and then they've been left to fall apart when the economy has fallen apart. And that world that someone's created, whether it's fact or fiction, how it was created, that the exterior world remains beautiful because nature is beautiful. Yeah. And it's this strange, I know sometimes when things are so bad and I look outside and I see those tall trees around my house and I'm like, they've been there for over 100 years and they're beautiful, and it kind of softens the blow. Yeah.
Well, if you think about, I'm sorry. No. If you think about like Detroit is what I think about whenever you say that. Or I don't know if you've seen any photographs of like old shopping malls.
Oh, that Lloyd Center is going through that right now in Portland.
Mm-hmm. Oh, sure. Mm-hmm. But I mean, old shopping malls that have been abandoned mm-hmm. and nature has now crept in and is completely taking over the place because mm. it will always do that. I mean, it's always going to win until we destroy it. But that's a different show. That's what this room is.
I don't think we can destroy nature to the point where it doesn't win.
Hmm. We'll see.
I mean, we might be gone.
Well, yeah.
Definitely.
Probably.
What were you going to say, Christine?
Oh, I was saying that there's some beautiful photographs of this amazing resort in the Catskills that's the same thing because it was like where the upper wealthy middle class went, and now nobody takes family vacations like that, and so the whole thing has been taken over. They're really pretty stunning.
Yeah, it's interesting. Oh, the buildings that have been left to.
Mm-hmm. And you can see the opulence that was there, the swimming pools and some of the stuff, but you can't, you know, it's all being slowly overgrown.
It's kind of beautiful in its way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It is.
Just that's circle of life. Okay.
It's a musical thing. It keeps hitting me.
It's the Lion King, Three Sisters.
That's right.
Come to the light.
Come to the light.
Yes.
So what's really intrigued you about the play on the whole, or what are discoveries you've made throughout the process so far?
That's really tough.
That's a hard one, right?
There's a lot, you know.
I feel like I spent so much time like reading this play and adapting it, and we started, and then you just realize kind of how much you still have to fill in the cracks with it, you know, even my own knowledge of it. You got it. just also, and it's being in a smaller space in the shoebox too, which I think just makes you appreciate it. But you know, like there's secrets are at a premium in this place, and people really don't have them. You know, like there's nothing that these people don't know about each other, even though they don't want to talk about it. Mm. And like Three Sisters certainly is not a play about confronting things. You know, and so I think it makes it even stronger that all these people have this stuff that they want to say or that they want to communicate, and that they're stopped. You know, either by their own personal peccadilloes or by some sort of societal constraint or psychological constraint. Mm-hmm. And that's just something I've really taken from it. Even with all these people in this room, you know, it's amazing how alone everybody feels even when they're together.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So your adaptation, is it taking place in the year that the piece was written for, or are you moving it?
We're kind of moving, you know, a lot of the design conversations have been, how do we find the link between contemporary times and 1854, when the play was written in 1900, but it's set in 1854. Mm-hmm. And what is that kind of line or that narrative line? And it's been a lot with the costume designer. You know, I think we've put the set in one place, and then we have props that bring us into a slightly more modern place or a very more modern place.
Oh, interesting. Such as examples, if you would?
Styrofoam cups.
Red solar cups.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
Which goes along with, I think, the disposability of the world.
I was going to mention that earlier, too, and the consumerism. You know, if you don't plan on staying in a place, why would you have fine china? I think that's a really interesting choice.
And then, you know, there's other things, you know, like keeping all the sisters in dresses or skirts the entire show is very much keeping their femininity and how that can afford you some things, but also really take a lot from you when you try to be, when you are just a woman in the world, and how little that has changed between 1854 and now.
Extremely frustrating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And like I think Arena is actually a great example. You know, she starts in very much kind of a dress that indicates that she's in 1854, you know, but then when she becomes more of a working woman after that, you know, the silhouette that she has changes, you know, and her top changes, and she becomes a little more modern in that, despite the fact that she's still very much in that world, you know, right. Despite the fact we've gone so far, we haven't gone that far as, like, at all.
I love the reflection of clothing in what human beings have to accomplish, and especially for women, and being an actor, and knowing, oh, this is why I wear this now, because I can. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're wearing if you're wealthy and you are in 1905, you can wear the most glamorous thing with dangling everything. But if you're poor in 1905, if you are dangling anything and you work in a factory, you're going to lose your arm. Yeah. And so there's so much there.
Yeah. Well, and I just really want people to realize, you know, that, like I said before, like the productions I've seen are really dusty. Mm-hmm. And I think these characters exist across time, you know, and that the struggles that they're going through in 1854, 1900, or 2018, they're not really that different. Like, we think we've come very far and we're very progressive, but we are not progressive enough. And
so there's a lot of liquidity in your time period.
Yes. Definitely.
And they, are they uniform in how you're progressing through time, or are...
No, it's kind of based, like, character to character, mm-hmm. like, depending on how far that person gets.
I feel like I stay probably the most traditional of everybody as Olga, and I think that she travels less as far as where she starts and where she finishes. You know, Irina goes through, I think, a pretty massive transformation, and even Masha, and I think I start one way, wanting to resist a couple things from happening, and then inevitably they have happened by the end, despite me protesting against them a lot of times. Don't want to be headmistress, and then here I am, headmistress, you know, that sort of
heartbreaking.
Inevitable march. I mean, she's not a hopeless character by any means. It was funny because when I first, Patrick and I were first speaking about the part, he was like, what are your reservations? And I was like, Chekhov is boring, and Olga is old. And he was like, you know, she's 29 at the start of the play, right? And I was like, okay, fine. But, and that was kind of my, I had seen one production before, but that was sort of my impression of her. And now I've, like, throughout rehearsals, she doesn't say a lot. You know, she exists in the room and watches a lot, and people forget about her a lot. But she has such a rich inner life and a lot of hope still. I think she still thinks that once I get everybody on their feet, then it's my turn. Then I will still, I will go to Moscow and I will find my love too. And I will, you know, not have to do this and be, I'll get to be the person I want to be and live the life I want to live. I don't think she thinks it's over by any means until it, certain point.
Right. Well, and that's, yeah, you know, that's human nature, I think, if you're going to survive, to continue to believe in your present as much as possible.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah, it's a pretty fascinating play and super timely, undoubtedly.
Yeah.
How about the relationships between the sisters? How do you think they shift and change, or do they?
I think they certainly do. It's been fun for me playing Irina, watching Masha and Olga, and because I feel like Irina is young enough to have a pretty deep bond with both of them, so she's able to see how they affect each other. And in this production, there are shared feelings for a certain male in the play, and even if the feelings aren't shared, there's interest, and I'll leave that kind of a mystery. But it's interesting because we were speaking of secrets, and sometimes we witness each other's secrets, and we have to try to bridge the distance between two people that we love and their secrets and what they're not willing to say to each other. And try to dissipate the hurt that they can cause each other. And obviously that's not always possible. But it's been really interesting to watch, you know, how their secrets affect each other.
Those relationships totally change. Meaning I think that we find more, Masha certainly finds more value, I think, within her sisters, and realizes that she's not an island. She can't do it alone, even if that sucks to say out loud. But what I've really enjoyed about is having little sideways glances with each Dainice and with Christy about the other while we're in the play, and then knowing that they're probably having sideways glances about Masha at the same time.
Yeah. We definitely are.
Well, she is the worst, but I love her. I really like that because it's so sisterly.
Oh, yeah.
To be like, oh my god.
Do you guys all have sisters?
I do.
I do.
I don't. You do. I have the brothers.
Yeah. But you've lived sisters in plays.
Oh, yeah. I have plenty of sisters in life.
Yeah. So here's off the topic, but just because we have a couple minutes more, what do you think about women wearing all black at the Golden Globes tonight?
Oh, I didn't know. Masha wears all black. Oh, I'm so excited. I'm sorry. That was so loud.
Yeah. On a freaking plane, girlfriend.
Tell me more about that. what?
Yeah, it's basically, was it the, I can't remember the name of the organization. It wasn't the Me Too, it was the Hollywood one that sprung out of that. And they encouraged women in support of this to wear black instead of the being the bright, shiny butterflies they normally are and having to talk about their dresses on the red carpet and to talk about their experiences.
As artists and humans.
Yeah.
And, who'd have thunk it?
And, yeah.
That is so badass.
I'm kind of stoked about
me
it.
Me too. Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure when I read more, there'll be varying degrees about acceptance. And also, you put it so well that, you know, not to talk about what we're wearing and how pretty we are and blah, 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 but, you know, that they'll still talk probably about designers who, this is my black dress and it's happened to be made by, you know,
that's
whomever.
Exactly what I was wondering. They're not going to wear black sweatpants, you know.
Now that would be
that
something.
Exactly.
That would be fun. Maybe we should do that for the Drammies.
I got them from Target.
Black sweatpants to the Drammies for all women.
Yes.
And bags over our heads with holes cut out.
I feel like that could be read poorly.
Well, they can read it however they want.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate you guys all talking to me, and I hope everyone will support Fertile Ground and come to the Northwest Classical Theater Collaborative between January 12th and the 28th. You can find info about tickets on Northwest Classical Theater Collaborative, NWCTC.org. Have a great rest of your night.
Great. Thank you, Susanna.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And now, Nikki Weaver and Gretchen Corbett talking about Weaving Women Together at Portland Playhouse.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to Adventures in Artslandia. I am sitting in the beautiful home of Nikki and Brian Weaver, co-artistic directors of Portland Playhouse. And Nikki is currently working on a beautiful piece called Weaving Women Together. And Gretchen Corbett is her fearless director and an amazing artist in our community. And we're just going to talk about what they're up to. You'll have a chance to see it near the end of the month. So I hope you'll come and see what they are up to. And now we can talk a little bit about it to whet your appetite. So Nikki, how did this all begin? I mean, I remember because it was, as far as I understand, it began with an email that I responded to. So take it away.
It began in October 2015, sitting on my couch, actually right over there, where I started to sort of think about what a magic skirt might look like that was entirely made up of other women's materials, fabrics, pieces of their lives. And so one of the things I did is I sent out this email to about 65 women, some that I knew personally and some that I didn't, and asked them for a piece of their life in fabric that they wouldn't mind parting with, and to send it to me and tell me a story about why they have kept it for a long or short amount of time. And so I sort of envisioned this skirt, but I didn't envision a story around what the skirt would become. So that was the beginning, and within 5 minutes of sending that email, this international yoga teacher who I'd never met responded saying, "Wow, honored. What's your address?" And I thought, oh shit, now I have to make something. I have to do something. And so that was sort of the beginning. And then what happened over that following year, I sort of had given people about a year timeline to submit pieces of fabric. And fabric arrived kind of at our doorstep in all different sizes, attached with different letters and stories, some handwritten, some scrawled on the back of receipts, some emails of...
Oh, I'm so glad to hear that other people scrawl on the back of receipts.
Yeah. And I kept them all. I kept them all in a folder as the fabric arrived, and I made little note cards sort of that I wrote the person's name on the front of the note card, and then on the back I wrote a description about the fabric and a word or two about the story they had given. So that as they started to arrive, I could sort of track who had given what and why. Mm. Yeah, that's the beginning of it.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
So now the next piece of the puzzle, no pun intended piece, would be to weave them together into a story that was personal to you. Is the story really based on the experience of receiving these pieces?
Yes and no. I mean, I'll let Gretchen chime in a minute. I mean... Really, then what happened after that is I locked myself in a trailer for 4 nights and sort of wrote, I guess, what I consider the book, sort of 20 pages of my life.
and then sort of sat there and thought, oh, what do I do with this now? And that was really, those 20 pages was my story, and then coming to kind of work with Gretchen, sort of the questions more of like, well, how do we tell these other women's stories? And kind of the one-liner around the piece that I keep thinking about is the story of losing my mother and how I've found her through these other women. So that's a little bit of what we've been playing with in the rehearsal room.
That's interesting. Now, when you say your story, do you mean your life story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And how you got from the beginning to now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Jen, are you ready for chiming?
Well, yeah, I mean, what we did was we took those 20 pages that Nikki had written in third person, and first she put them in first person, and then we looked at that and went, okay, so now how do we theatricalize this, and how do we tell this story in a way that is important to her heart and therefore our hearts? Nikki is a very physical person, as you know. She moves beautifully, and
a world-class athlete.
No kidding. Well, she is.
I mean, no, it's real. I mean, I think it's really interesting. And you know, I have two daughters who are runners, of course, and they, you know, I think you've been inspirational to them. And I mean, you've achieved some incredible things in your creative life, your athletic life, your family life.
It's funny, the athleticism. I mean, it's something that I like separated from theater for many, many years, until a director said to me, he said, you have built endurance over your lifetime, and characters require endurance, and it's the only way kind of through. And he said, and I never have to worry about that with you. And he said, and also, he said, with that comes dedication, right? When you have a physical practice and a commitment, he said, then it's easy for me to envision you in all sorts of roles. So that's something that I've come to see as part of my artistic practice rather than a separate self.
That's cool.
One of the fun ways in terms of rehearsal, also, oh, but I should also say that Nikki has written songs for this show that she's never sung on stage before, and she is a musician as well as an extraordinary artist and an athlete. So that the richness of that, and then we brought in Jessica Wallenfeld to help us with some movement, and seeing Nikki respond so intuitively to movement and dance, we're coming at the characters really through a physical place. Nikki's very articulate, and so she speaks off the top of her head in a way that I couldn't do for the whole life of me, but she it's really a joy to be in the room with her.
Oh, that's so wonderful. And it is not surprising to me that words sometimes don't cover it.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Physical life can really bring so much.
And some music and of course silence too, you know, all those things tell the story. And because we're doing a workshop, we don't have a design team. So we're really bare bones, which is, there's something kind of wonderful to be said about that. It's sort of like doing it in a bare room. Not quite, but almost, with a, you know, a chair and a piano.
Who's playing for you?
Me.
Oh, for heaven's sake, that's fantastic.
Yeah, fantastic and scary.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah.
I bet. I was just thinking about this, and what you said about scary really brings is uncomfortableness is so important to stay alive, to go through it. But I don't wish it on anybody. Performing wise, I know what it's like to feel like, this is not going well. You know, or you always is going, you know, being in your head and all that.
I think it's the anticipation that's the hardest. You know, it's before you get there. And then once you're there, it feels more comfortable.
I mean,
I had a lot of anticipation before we started, and now I'm going, oh, Well, actually, we're on a road here.
If it's fun,
yeah,
it's good.
That's right.
And I think, like, and with that, for me, like, comes fear, right? Like, that word fear of looking at everything on the page or on the note cards that we've come up with, sort of my own initial fear of, can I really let go and just trust the process? And the fear that when you're playing somebody else, particularly someone in your life that you know or that has changed you, how do you play them in a way that you're serving them and the story and not making fun of them? And I think really that's where a lot of my fear came in of who are these women and how do I bring their essence into the room rather than think about, oh, I'm making fun of them. Why am I doing this? Has been, something I've thought a lot about.
Anna Deavere Smith comes to mind. You know, I wonder when she first did Fires in the Mirror, you know, those real people that she was becoming. And I never thought about that. But being, you know, I guess it all comes down to serving the story and keeping that integrity at the fore.
That's true. And who those people were to you at that time, instead of who they are out in the world.
Right.
It's really much more personal, so that if what you learned from them is something negative, something not to do, it doesn't necessarily mean that that's who they are.
Right.
Because we all teach negative stuff. Certainly I do. I know.
Well, it's so funny because I guess I just hope and pray that everything that's happening this last year about people coming forward about truth and that will come to the realization that we are all capable of great pain and inflicting suffering on others, and we're also capable of so much beauty. But without opening up that door, which is uncomfortable sometimes, then we don't get to see it.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
So you're working on this for 2 weeks prior to the workshop.
For Portland Playhouse, but at Portland Opera's space.
Right. Oh, golly, that beautiful black box space.
Yeah.
That great.
Yeah, it is.
So are you in the space now rehearsing?
No, we're rehearsing at Vanport Studios, and then we'll move over to the space a few days before the first audience.
Mm-hmm. Our first audience is on the 17th
of January,
and we play through those 2 weekends. And Nikki and I will continue to rehearse and work on it during the last 2 weeks, so it will evolve. Is what our plan is.
Do you have any space for feedback from audience, or is this purely your creative process and not, you know, some workshops they do talk backs and all that kind of stuff?
We haven't talked about that. I don't know sometimes if asking an audience at the moment is as helpful as perhaps getting written response or something that's more thoughtful, because of course we've been with this project for a lot of months already, and there are a lot of things we've already thought about, and made choices that were thoughtful. So it's always hard, I think, in the moment to get feedback from an audience that's useful.
If you were to have your most dreamed of feedback, what would it be? What's your hope for the piece in terms of what people are seeing?
I don't know if I've thought that far ahead. I hope that it lands on women and men, on all genders, that it's bigger than just a female story, and that people can relate to some of the women that they see on stage. And really, I mean, I keep thinking a lot about myself, like what makes a workshop different from a full production? And I don't think I really know what the evolution of this piece is or will be. I mean, we do 2 weeks at Portland Opera, and then we're doing 2 performances at Coffee Creek Correctional Center at a female prison in Oregon in February, in the minimum and the medium security side. And I mean, I think a lot about what will that be like? What will it be like performing in a prison? Almost more than I think about what will the audience here experience and what do I want them to take away.
For me, this play is about healing, how we heal through the love and warmth of other women, how we as women and open up to them and take the gifts that they give us. And so that's my hope. The takeaway.
Mm-hmm.
I can think, I think of the analogy of the skirt being made, stitched together, you know, broken to whole. And I think about the loss of my own father, which was such a huge loss for me, but yet digesting that in a creative way over, you know, the last 7 years, which it's like he comes into my life in various ways, plus working on a piece about him too, is just continuing to grow. And as you said, you know, for with people I've worked with on it or talked about it with, again, it's like the brokenness is so not a bad thing. The jagged edges of grief and how painful it is. Once you start stepping into it, however that looks, you're writing a piece, you're just talking to a friend over coffee, it just seems to be such a healing. It's something that makes me more whole, I think, in the long run, but it just, it's not very comfortable.
Well, I mean, this that's what this is about in a way. For Nikki.
I think about that, the sharing of grief or experience or love or courage or loss when I look at the photos of the women that are in the room with me, that you'll get to see in the piece, both, you know, sort of in frames as pictures and as projections and on stage, but that there's something kind of wonderful of choosing who, which women and who and when you surround yourself with them, you know, whether it's frequent or infrequently, that sort of as I look at this collective in the rehearsal space, it's kind of something to see these different strong women. Yeah, and the stories they each have.
Did you tell everyone who's in the show that they're in it?
No. No, no.
I'm just curious if people are going to come see it. I mean, you know, I think, wow, okay, that's interesting, you know.
You know, I will say a lot of the women that have submitted fabric from different parts of the country or world are flying out to see the show. And there are familiar voices that you'll hear as they read or share their story from the letter they sent. And I imagine a lot of the community here will be able to identify some of these women. And you'll either see their faces or you'll see their grandmothers or fathers or great-grandmothers' faces. So there's been much for me to learn about the women that I thought I knew but didn't know these stories from in terms of their family history or so the importance of fabric or past life that they're that they have come from.
So cool to give voice to stories that might not have ever been unearthed. And of course, going to the correctional facility, I would think, I guess my prayer would be that they'll be empowered to share their stories and also to see you lifting the veil on other stories.
I mean, and singing and dancing and moving and telling stories that make us laugh and cry. I mean, it's kind of a no-brainer.
Can't beat that. Can't beat that. So you're a mom of two young women. Young
girls. They're girls.
Rugrats.
Yeah, that's right, I like to call them. Yeah. And so have they, I know that they're, you know, very much connected in your life. So, and I, how are they knowing about this?
Yeah, you'll see them in the show as a visual, and there's a song about them in the show that, that they hear me play at home and know parts of, and help me sing out of tune too. You know, and I think really, like, as a mother, often, and this is one of the lines in one of my songs, is I think about like what it is, what do you leave behind, right? Like when you're gone. What do you leave either for your children or your family or your partner? What do you leave behind? So there's definitely reflection in that. And then what do we carry forward with us? Yeah.
Do your girls tell you to stop singing? Mine always did.
Yeah, mainly around Frozen or Moana songs. I'm not allowed to sing those, just they are.
Right, I get that. Been there, done that. Yeah. In the car, stop singing, Mom, stop singing. Yeah. It's gotten less, really, pretty much, alas. But, you know, my girls are a lot bigger than yours. But and I got to stop saying that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, what are the things you're most looking forward to trying out on an audience? I'd probably the whole piece, but is there anything that comes to mind?
The clown stuff we've been playing with, which is both very fun and terrifying. And of course, when it's Gretchen in the room laughing at me, it feels like, oh, everyone will laugh at me.
Well, it's true.
I think also this stunning skirt that's coming together.
That reminds me.
Lindsay Reed. Yes.
I saw Lindsay out on the town probably a month ago, and she told me she was making the skirt. Yes. She's a marvelous artist and an incredible seamstress.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So
she has been with this project since the very beginning, about 2 years ago, and has just spent her lifeblood sort of articulating over the textures and the fabric and what should go together and how to include little details and added stitches and embroidery. And I think we're actually going to see it today, and it might be finished today.
Oh, for heaven's sake, that's a big deal.
But the few times that she has come over late at night, we've sat sort of with the skirt and talked about the stories and which belonged to which and, you know, of where these women have come from and why she wanted these two women to be next to each other in the details of her skirt.
Ooh, that's so fantastic.
I'm really interested in like trying that out on an audience that is either familiar with There's My Piece or an audience that has, you know, not seen the skirt or the details of what she's created.
Just that historical context too of women and sewing and making clothes, you know, it's such a beautiful...
Yeah, and the choices that we make, isn't it? The choices we make to clothe ourselves. I mean, we make that choice every day. It's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. So that something about people from the way they choose their clothes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's amazing how you can dive into minutiae.
Yeah.
As actors, all three of us, you know you love to see what you're going to be costumed in. Because it's a huge statement about who you are and how you get ready for the day, you meet the world.
Yeah. And it's so nice to be able to have input in your costumes.
I think I know exactly what you were thinking right then. There are times when you don't have that, and there may be a discussion that must be had. Yes. But again, diving into the uncomfortable is always good.
That's right.
Speak your truth. I don't like it when my belly pooches out like this. That's mostly my commentary.
Well, there's that. Or you know, I don't think she has a pantsuit. I think she's the sexiest thing on the planet.
Yes, well, hello.
You know?
Yes, and as women.
So, I got what I wanted in that particular instance,
another whole conversation that's pretty darn fascinating. How people see you, how they see the character, women. Oh boy. Mm-hmm. We could talk for days.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you so much for telling me about the show. And I hope that everybody who's listening will come see Weaving Women Together, which will be at the Portland Opera Space. But you can get tickets at Portland Playhouse, which is portlandplayhouse.org.
And if you're a woman, you can contribute to the evolution of this project by bringing your own piece of fabric or story to tell, and there'll be a place in the lobby for you to add your story.
Oh, that's wonderful. Mm-hmm. That sounds great. All right, well, I know I'm going to bring my girls.
Woo-hoo!
Thanks, Susanna.
Thank you.
If I could fly to you, I would. I wouldn't be giving up so soon. La da da da.